Reading from The Pirates by George MacDonald Fraser, Chapter the 12th. Velvet night shed its peace o'er the viceregal palace. The great ballroom lay deserted. Naught remained of Xavier Cugat and his orchestra, save a faint aroma of hair oil and a solitary shattered maraca. Pale moonlight shone through archways, on empty corridors and silent stairways. Continental breakfast orders hung outside bedroom doors, and even the mice were lapping it up in their nests. It can't last, though. Soon no one will be getting a wink of sleep, for e'en now a fracas is breaking out in the wine cellar, with muffled oaths and blows and excited cries in Spanish, and the unmistakable noises of people wrestling in yellow chartreuse. Follows dread silence, and presently a thin, distant wail of agony, and now the footsteps of a female in drag, running in frantic haste as a pale figure flits through the guest wing, sobbing in terror. Avery awoke to sounds of scratching at his chamber door, and sprang nimbly from his pit, teeth clenched and eyes blazing. Had he or had he not put out a do-not-disturb notice, and here they were wanting to make up the room at 4 a.m. He flung open the door wrathfully, and a lithe stripling tumbled in and clung to him, gasping, "Oh, Capitan Ben, Capitan Ben! All is lost. You are lumbered, and we must flee quickly. There is no time to lose." Realizing almost instantly that it was not a chambermaid, but Mellifluous, the captain drew her in, closed the door, and strove to calm her as she collapsed on the bed and panted out her tale. Having absconded from the ballroom earlier, she had wandered the grounds in a dazed condition for some hours until challenged by a patrol of guards. Darting into a low doorway, she had found herself in a cellar occupied by a drunken dwarf and a slumbering red-bearded giant, at which news Avery's eyes narrowed to steely slits, and he stroked his chin as he muttered, "Firebeard and Goliath, ha!" Hiding behind a barrel, she had seen the guards lay hold of them, and from the obscenities they uttered she had judged them English. Not that the giant had put up much resistance, for "he was blastered out of his mind, but the dwarf, he struggled and called them bloody dagos. Then presently that disgusting Don Lardo and the greaseball enchilada came in their night attire, and they take the two English to the torture chamber. This I see through a little barred window. The giant they chain up, and the midget he squeal and say if they let him go, he will tell them big news. So Don Lardo laugh and say, 'Let's hear it, shorty.' And the dwarf he say, 'He have seen you fight with Capitan Bilbo, and you are not Don Espresso at all, but the famous Capitan Avery, an English heretic pirate, which is true as I know.'"
"I see," said Avery. "And did they release the dwarf?"
"No." Donna Mellifluous shuddered piteously. "They put him on the rack, and oh, it was horrible. They tore off his leg."
"They tore off his what?" cried Avery, aghast.
"His leg, his poor little left leg. He scream with agony when he come off."
"Oh, it's all right," said Avery soothingly. "It's made of wood." "Then what?"
"Don Lardo, he clap his hands, and his teeth fall out with pleasure. Tell me, why does he not have them stuck in with something? Ah, but then he say to rack the dwarf again, but the chief torturer, he say you cannot rack a man with only one leg, because he's not balanced properly, and it might damage the machine. I could bear no more," Mellifluous concluded pathetically. "And anyway, I must fly to warn you, and now I am here, and we must fly, Capitan Ben, before Don Lardo send his guards for you."
She flung herself into his arms again, and Avery patted her shoulder while his thoughts raced. There went his night's sleep, he was thinking, and now that his cover was blown, a swift retreat was probably in order. although his haughty spirit rebelled at the thought.
"You will fly, Capitan Ben, and take me with you."
Her slim arms were around his neck, and her eyes were those of a yearning koala.
"I cannot stay to be married to that repulsive Don Lorando. I shall kill myself first. Please, please, take me with you."
To be sure, brave child, said our Ben, but first I must have words with this red-bearded fellow of thine. And he buckled on his rapier, made sure his shirt ruffles were open at the front, and smoothed his hair at the mirror.
What? Mellifluo was horrified. But he is stoned and chained in the Ori dungeon with the guards and torture people, and if you go there, they will kill you.
Have no fear, dear maid, but listen, said Avery crisply. This red rascal, Firebeard by name, has an item o' price which I must e'en recoup from him. So now you shall direct me to his dungeon, and whilst I steal thither, shalt await me at the quay where we came ashore.
No, never shall I be parted from you, Capitan Ben. Where you go, I go.
And so insistent was she that Avery was melted and kissed her in brotherly fashion, at which she fainted briefly. When she came to, it was to see our captain in the act of snapping a magnificent gold cross containing a black pearl from the hilt of a great black rapier. He placed this glittering trophy and a similar one containing a diamond within the tight folds of his waist sash, and smiled on her with boyish confidence. "Come, gallant Spanish lady," said he, "and see how Long Ben Avery struts his stuff, and fear not, a dungeon full of dons is a mere pipe-opener to me." He took her slim hand, and when she would have protested, stunned her to silence with a light salute on her dainty fingers. Down the great silent stairway they stole, hand in hand, the dim lamps casting huge shadows as they passed. And they would have won unhindered to the ground floor if they hadn't met Don Lardo and his attendants coming up. The viceroy, more hideous than ever, in a scarlet dressing-gown and nightcap, with vampire bats clinging to his shoulders. Black widows in the evening, vampires at night, he was very particular. Was in a steaming rage. They heard him shrieking as he stamped up the stairs, and Avery drew Mellifluo aside into an alcove, whence they watched in breathless silence as he passed by. Enchilada trotting fearfully beside him in a perfectly foul Buchanan tartan dressing gown, while a file of morioned soldiers brought up the rear.
"One-legged dwarf!"
The viceroy was snarling, and they saw his gooseberry eyes glitter palely in the half-light.
"Why doth it always have to happen to me? I wanted to hear his bones crack and splinter, and what do I get? Plywood! Ah, but he shall roast on a spit to-morrow, wooden leg and all. By then we shall have seized the ship of this Bilbo and our own Santa Cascara."
"And the English Capitan, Excellency?" cried Enchilada.
"Should we not clobber him now while he sleeps?"
"Intrude your opinions again, Carrion," hissed Don Lardo, "and I shall have your enormous entrail ripped from you with red-hot pincers. Have you no artistry, swine? We let him sleep, and all shall use him as Don Espresso to-morrow. While I gloat and hug myself to see him lulled, until at my pleasure I denounce him and win the plaudits of all." They heard his huge lips slobber and his teeth bounce chattering on the stair as he passed on. And Mellifluo whispered tremulously in Avery's ear,
"How could I face that across the breakfast table? Oh, Capitan Ben, save me from him."
Avery gave her a reassuring squeeze, and the hot-blooded young Hidalga, mistaking it for affection, could not restrain an ecstatic whimper. Don Lardo checked, his great hideous face glaring round, the bats aflutter on his massive shoulders. "What was that?" he rasped. "An unauthorized murmur?" His mad gaze fell on Enchilada. "Gluttonous offal, have you been at the curried beans again?" His hand lashed cruelly across the chamberlain's pudgy cheek, and then he lurched upwards, mouthing horribly, and Avery drew the terrified Mellifluous swiftly out and down the staircase. Across the hall they hurried, and by many a passage the beauteous Spaniard directed Avery to where a dank flight of stone steps wound down into a torch-lit gloom where rats scuttled, nitre gleamed on the walls with their pathetic graffiti. "Up Torquemada! Aye, right up him! Morgan rules, okay? And the Inquisition takes better care of you." Rusty chains dangled, and from the Stygian vaults beneath came faint clank o' chain and murmuring voices. Avery, sword in hand, raised a cautionary finger to his lips and almost gave himself a nasty cut, and then, with Mellifluous clinging at his shoulder, stole forward across the slippery flags towards a lighted archway and peeped cautiously within. The Spanish jailers had spared no pains to make their prisoners comfortable for the night. Firebeard, now awake and as sentient as he ever was, had been spread-eagled on the floor with great weights laid on his chest. His face was as red as his beard as he bore the intolerable burden that was threatening to burst his ribs. To one side, Black Sheba, her silver lamé trouser suit, sorrily besmirched and torn, was bound to a tilting platform. Above her face a huge water-skin slowly but steadily dripped water, a drop at a time, onto the sodden cloth with which she had been gagged. It was nicely calculated to give her the agony of suffocation without actually drowning her. Close by, Bilbo was confined in a devilish frame of slender metal strips like some grotesque suit of armor. From it, thick wires ran to a great brazier which glowed white-hot, the principle being that heat traveled along the wires to Bilbo's suit, which was gradually warming up to the point where he would be slowly grilled alive. The fourth captive, little Goliath, was hung from a strapado, his arms behind his back, his single foot supporting him, and just to add to the fun, a spiked board had been placed beneath that foot. Not surprisingly, he was being vocal, but in explanation rather than complaint.
"'Twon't my fault, Captain. If that big soak on the floor hadn't got hisself pissed, we'd never had been took, and I didn't mean to give away the ship's position, honest. It just slipped out, like—' "'And I'm just a little chap, Captain, and I only got one leg. Don't blame me, Captain!'
"'Peace, mannikin,' gasped Bilbo. "'Tis all one now. We ha' come to our bad end at last. Oh, I burn, dammy! 'Tis foretaste o' hell. Oddsooks, if I could but take one of them with me!' And from his cage he glared at the two jailers, great bearded ruffians in leather aprons, who drank and diced and talked with their mouths full at a greasy table, and when the luck ran against them they would pelt the hapless captives cruelly with bread rolls and orange peel. One of them now rose, stretched himself, and sauntered over to leer down at Sheba as she vainly tossed her head to avoid the choking drip that fell upon her rag.
"'Thirsty, Chiquita!'
mocked the torturer, and as the amber eyes shone hate at him, he reached out to fondle her lewdly.
"'But you shall be dry enough when they bring you to the stake, black heretic bitch!'
And with a cruel laugh he turned away to meet a fist, which crashed against his jaw with shattering force and stretched him senseless on the flags. His comrade was half out of his chair as Avery whirled on him one quick shuffle, a pile-driving left to the stomach and a right to the head, and that was number two taken care of. Black Sheba felt the suffocating gag plucked from her mouth and gasped in wonder and adoration at the splendid vision leaning over her. Joy bells rang in the ears of the dusky filibustress as she struggled for breath.
"Barracuda," she gasped, "you came back for me."
"Disgusting," snapped Avery. "Our ambassador at Madrid is going to have a word or two to say about this, I can tell you. Why, it is against all usage of captives. Four to a cell, too. Canst breathe, woman?"
"Ay, but my heart is like to choke me," cried Sheba. "Ah, release me that I may embrace thee, amore mio."
But Avery was away, kicking the spiked board from beneath Goliath's foot and slashing the ropes of the strapado with his rapier. "Donna Mellifluo," he called briskly, "would you be so kind as to cast a bucket of water over that person?" And he indicated the writhing Bilbo. Then he knelt beside the recumbent Firebeard and with one quick heave had thrust the weights from his body.
"Damn me deadlights, if it ain't the king's popinjay," wheezed the hirsute giant. "And a welcome sight, by thunders, his eyes split me sideways else. Why, here's Jai, and much obliged to ye, wi' curse."
"Save it," snapped Avery, and with steely-eyed deliberation laid his sword-point at Firebeard's throat. "I come not in thy behalf, fellow, but to ask thee this. Where is the cross ye filched from the Madagascar crown? Now speak, or as I'm a gentleman, I'll spit you like a capon. Well?"
"Well, as you're a gentleman and I'm a rogue, spit away and welcome."
Firebeard's piggy eyes glared through the fuzz.
"'Tis sweeter end than the dons'll give me by cock. So thrust home, cully, dispatch, ah!"
Avery was snookered. Why, the great blister was right. A quick death was no threat at all in his position. And anyway, Avery knew that he could never skewer a helpless man, not even such a stinker as Firebeard. He bit his flawless lip, and Bilbo, now enveloped in clouds of steam as a result of Mellifluo's bucket work, laughed weakly in his cage.
"Aye, slay away, king's man, or if you're wise, make a bargain. Our liberty for the information ye seek, ha?
Treat with such as you, never." Avery regarded the cloud of steam with proud scorn. "Thy lives are forfeit for thy gross crimes, and whither 'tis Spain or England visits execution on you, 'tis all one."
"Then ye can go hang, dawcock," roared Firebeard. "I'd sooner rot, aye, or burn at a Spanish stake, than tell ye where your precious cross is, so kill me and be damned to ye."
Avery stood a moment irresolute, and then his eye fell on Goliath, who was sitting, massaging his small wrists. He alone of the captives was free, but without his wooden leg he was more or less immobile.
"You," snapped Avery, "are but a poor minion of the Brotherhood. To loose thee on the world again were small weight on my conscience. So, sirrah, where is Firebeard his cross? Tell me, and I vow to bear thee out of this to safety."
Goliath stopped massaging to gape, and Firebeard and Bilbo gave tongue with a vengeance.
"Pick on someone your own size," they roared. "Shame! Of all the mean tricks! Why, what a feeble spirit is this Long Ben Avery to bully a poor halfling! Boo! Who'd have thought it?"
and the like. But Avery was implacable.
"Choose, midget," he said coldly, "and that speedily. Time presses."
Goliath sweated big drops. He shot a scared glance towards Bilbo and started violently as the supine Firebeard growled ferociously. Goliath licked his lips and cringed at Avery.
"Your promise, honest? You'll get me away?"
Firebeard went berserk in his chains.
"Maggot, will you truckle to this pimp, you turncoat beetle? Rend me and burn me if I could come at ye, I'd tear your other leg off."
"Happy Dan Pugh's got it,"
babbled Goliath. "Strite up, guv'nor. He won it off of old Airy Belly there at Gaiman, and—" "Loaded dice," bawled Firebeard. "We was robbed. We should ha' stood in bed."
"'Tis very well," said Avery to Goliath. "I shall take you with me. You are slight enough to carry till we may contrive you another leg. Donna Mellifluo, we had best away." Now, you'll have noticed that Sheba hasn't said a word during these exchanges, sick as mud at the chilling realization that Avery hadn't come to rescue her. She had not failed to note that the slender stripling was a young woman of outstanding oomph, albeit apparently a transvestite.
Jealous fury quivered the pirate queen in her bonds, and she darted Mellifluous a glance of fell malevolence.
"Aye, best away, Donna Mellifluous," she sneered harshly. "Go with thy brave champion, who abandons his countrymen to doom Odago torture, and thinks no shame to coerce yon poor crippled gnome." She curled a lip at Avery. "And you, captain, since ye have forgot your precious vanity so soon, I wish ye joy o' that skinny ninny in men's breeches."
"Skinny!" flared Mellifluous indignantly. "At least I don't creep over my own lower lip."
But Avery stifled her with an upraised hand and spoke at Sheba. "I would have ye under no misprision," said he, a slight flush suffusing his clean-cut features. "This is a distressed Spanish lady, whom I shall deliver from shameful fate. She is no love of mine, but poor abandoned innocent, so you can take your foul forecastle gossip and bottle it." But the pirates hooted with derision and made vulgar noises.
"Ha, ha, we believe you, whoopity-wee, a likely tale, i'faith. We know, ha, some innocent that doth flaunt her curves in male attire. Avery's got a girlfriend, nya, 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 nya."
And while Firebeard blew huge raspberries and Bilbo jeered Saturnin in his cage, Sheba spat in contempt, and our Ben went beetroot with anger and scorn. Little could they guess that while they engaged in futile insult and denial, three flights up Dunlardo was pausing at the door of his bedchamber, frowning in sudden thought, which made his face look like Granny's X-rays. He plucked at his great nether lip.
"Ha! Did I misjudge thee, enchilada?" he croaked. "For now I mind me, there were no curried beans on the buffet to-night."
His eyes rolled like gobstoppers.
"Though that strange gasp of wind I heard on the staircase, whence came it, if not from thee?"
Back down in the dungeon, Avery had gone from beetroot to off-white, his haughty gaze raking the captives.
"For shame, to bandy a lady's name in the dungeon! But why should I waste breath on you? Come, Mellifluous!"
And he scooped Goliath under his free arm and turned away.
"Farewell, hero!" Sheba's smoky snarl followed him. "Crawl back to England, and tell him how the dons did your dirty work for you." "Aye, faith!" cried Bilbo. "He was to hunt us down, this roaring blade. Why, what a cat's paw is he! To creep hence, aye, but he fled more nimbly before my point this night, did he not, Sheba?"
"And we did not peach on him before the viceroy, neither." Sheba's eyes were on Avery, no longer scornful, but proud and passionate. "Oh, she's fairly percolating for him still, the crazy Jezebel."
"And we give him a fair chance on Dead Man's Chest and all," bellowed Firebeard. "Of course, we'm just poor pirates, we, not gentlefolk like him, Wittowanian. We don't know no better to stick by our mates, aye, through hell and brimstone, scuttle me. I'll bet he got off Dead Man's Chest sneaky-like and all."
"Now look here," cried Avery. "I've had about enough of this. Firstly, you are not my mates. Secondly, Bilbo, I was miles ahead on points, and you know it. Thirdly, it's not my fault if you're in the toils of the Inquisition." A small hand on his arm interrupted him, and he found Donna Mellifluous regarding him with troubled eyes.
"Must you leave them, Capitan Ben?"
"Let me loose!"
Goliath was wriggling beneath Avery's arm, kicking fiercely with his one leg.
"Put me down. If you're going to scarper, I'll stay. I've changed my mind. I'll turn you free, mates, and we'll take our chance, the four of us. Let me go, rot your boots."
He tried to bite the captain's arm, struggling feebly in that iron grasp, weeping and swearing something frightsome. Then Avery looked round the dungeon again. Well, you know what he was thinking. Only a rotter could leave them, blood-stained enemies though they were. On the other hand, if he relented, they'd probably turn on him at the drop of a plumed caster. And where would Vanity and Mellifluous and his mission be then? Their parole wouldn't be worth a curse. And yet Sheba had stocked his boat with goodies, and Bilbo was a simply topping swordsman, and Firebeard had a mental age of about 3, and presumably couldn't be held accountable. And damn it, even the dwarf was going all noble on him. "Oh, all right," he said irritably, and dropped Goliath, who promptly hopped over and drew the bolts from Bilbo's cage. At Avery's moody sign, Mellifluo unclamped Firebeard's shackles, and our hero himself slit Sheba's bonds with his rapier. Like a striking snake, the black bombshell uncoiled from her bench. Her arms flew around Avery's neck, and as her lips locked on his like electromagnets, he heard the bongo drums booming in his brain and jungle incense inflaming his senses. Strange weakness jellied his knees momentarily, and then Sheba's voice was throbbing throatily at his ear. "Ah, mad fool, 'twas inevitable. Why must ye struggle against fate? Thou art Sheba's, and she thine. Ay, to the end of the seas and beyond, thou lovesome hunk. Nay, hold me, Barracuda, for—" "Don't you believe it!" Avery broke loose briskly and slapped away her hand, which was massaging his shirt ruffles. "I doubt not I shall repent me this weakness. But hark ye, woman, and you, sea scum!" Here he rounded at Bilbo and Firebeard, who were on their feet, rubbing their cramped limbs and regarding him with wolfish wariness and open-mouthed looniness, respectively. "This is but a truce till we be beyond reach of the cursed dons. Thereafter 'tis war betwixt us, and you'll save yourselves a ton of trouble by packing it in and throwing yourselves on the mercy of the court. For 'twill be surrender or death for you, mark me." "Surrender," crooned Sheba, nuzzling his ear. "Ah, 'tis all I ask. Surrender in your arms, caro mio." "Nay now, Cully," quo' Bilbo silkily, "here would be rank waste, rack me. For bethink you, you're still a wanted man, aye, and will be doubly so when word gets abroad that ye have broken us free of King Philip his dungeon, aye, and hast shown thyself right apt to piracy, having taken the Santa Cascara like any filibuster." "It's a fact," bawled Firebeard and drummed on his chest. "Oh, a sweet stroke! Burn pink and quarter me else. I art a brotherhood boy, Ben Avery, like it or not. So let's away, and with this laughing sandbag and this dago craft o' thine, we'll raise hot hell along the main, and then Tortuga ho, and be damned in that." His eye rolled on Mellifluo, who was viewing with dismay and indignation Black Sheba's attentions to Avery. "Arr, and we'll take this Spanish pullet as hostage, belike, or for some such purpose as we use wenches for, if I can mind me what it is." He tugged at his beard in perplexity, trying to remember. "Now look here," Avery was beginning, when suddenly Mellifluo screamed. A great voice in the gloom above bawled, "Life!" Sirens whined, whistles blew, and the dim-lit dungeon was suddenly aflame with the gleam of torches which glittered on naked steel in the hands of armed soldiers. They crowded the stone galleries, looking down on the chamber, and pressed behind the hulking figure of Don Lardo at the stairhead. His hideous face glared like a Halloween mask from the shadows, his dentures clashed like castanets, and the vampires clinging to his scarlet robe squeaked and fluttered. Yes, the sneaky brute had come back to investigate the noise he had heard on the stairs, bringing the heavy mob with him, and now, "Though the birds would flutter away," he gloated, "I was right, enchilada, I'm always right, it's terrific!" He screamed with crazy laughter, slobbering down at the little frozen group among the instruments of torture. "Down and seize them, lash them, bind them with chains, lay them helpless at my feet so that I can dance on them and hear them fracture. Oh, on, on!" Pandemonium ensued as the Spanish soldiers blundered obediently down the steps, the poor expendable slobs. You've seen them, often, lurching clumsily into the fray, ready to fall down obligingly as the big names in the cast run them through. Sure enough,
The leading officer transfixed himself on Avery's point, and Sheba pounced on his fallen rapier and leaped to Avery's side. In a twinkling, two more Spaniards had collapsed, covered in ketchup and crying, "Arg!" And half a dozen others were scattered like ninepins as Firebeard, grabbing up one of the fallen jailers and using him as a club, rushed roaring to join in. Bilbo, watching his crafty chance, disarmed an opponent by seizure, and in a trice there was a pile of corpses at the stair foot as the attackers shrank from those three whirling blades and the body which Firebeard wielded with joyous abandon. Shoulder to shoulder fought the four, while Donlardo tore his hair in apoplectic rage, and Enchilada kilted up his Buchanan tartan dressing gown and hid behind a pillar. Donna Mellifluo screamed and shrank becomingly against the wall as the dank chamber rang with dint of steel, for there was no lack of Spanish reserves and no way out for our party. They were bottled but good as the Dons flung themselves into the fight. Meanwhile, Goliath the dwarf was using his loaf, rightly concluding that the melee was no place for a one-legged individual 2 feet in height. He had hopped to the side of the other jailer, who was coming round, and jabbing the man's own dagger at his throat, demanded to be shown the emergency exit. "Take them alive!" shrieked Donlardo, shredding a bat in his claw-like hands and muttering, "One for the maiden, 2 for the rack, 3 for scorpions wriggling in a thack. Why don't you overwhelm them, you cowardly rabble? You're not doing it properly! Disarm them by letting them stab you, and roll away with their swords. Collapse on them, you filth!" He moaned and gibbered as his men fell over themselves before that wall of dancing steel. Avery, cool and academic as always, lips pursed thoughtfully as he lunged and parried, Bilbo hurling taunts as he slid in and out in his rakish Italian style, d'ye see, Sheba shouting with cruel glee as her point gored a throat or slashed a face, Firebeard bashing away regardless of the damage he was doing to the jailer. Even so, they were being forced back across the dungeon, and Spaniards were spreading out to take them in flank when, "This way, Captain! Follow me! Quick, this way!" Goliath was hopping and yelling in an archway across the dungeon, and as one the four turned and ran, Sheba pausing only to stab the second jailer, she never could resist an unarmed enemy. Through the arch they raced and turned again to meet their pursuers. Steel clashed as Avery and Sheba faced them in the narrow passage. There was a soggy thud as Firebeard flung his human club, now rather limp, into the press, and Bilbo snatched up Goliath and shook him eagerly. "Whither, mannikin? What's below, ha?" Huh?
"Down the steps, Captain. A postern to the river, boats and canoes and that."
As there always are, of course, in any properly appointed dungeon. Sheba, her eye shadow aglow with fierce excitement, buried her steel in the breast of a Spaniard, crowed with delight as Avery felled a second, clung to him for one brief passionate kiss, what time she enveloped a thrust and riposted into the throat of a third, and gasped exultantly, "Ah, barracuda mine, what finer prelude to our union than this? Lust o' blood and lust o' love, both are ours!" "Please," exclaimed Avery, neatly disarming a fourth attacker, "control yourself, and try not to get in the way. It's extremely dangerous."
"What is danger with you at my side?" wondered Sheba adoringly, as she lunged gracefully and recovered, wiping her blade with a flourish on her collapsing victim. "See, the dogs give back before us. Let us fly, camarado!"
But even as they turned to follow Firebeard, who was lumbering to the steps in Bilbo's wake, a tremulous scream sounded from the dungeon.
"Ah, Capitan Ben, do not leave me! See, I am in their cruel clutches!"
Sure enough, beyond the reluctant milling mob of Spaniards, Avery beheld Donna Mellifluo struggling in the arms of Enchilada, who was assuring a goggling Donlardo that this was a female in drag, and Spanish by the sound of it. "Bother," thought Avery, "why have women no positional sense?" Well, he'd just have to cut his way through to her, throw her over his shoulder, pink Donlardo if possible, and fight his way clear again, that was all.
"Back at a tick," he said, rather breathlessly to Sheba. "You and Firebeard hold them in play, whiles I..."
"Rash bombhead!"
cried Sheba, her beautiful dusky face contorted, her lashes snapping in alarm.
"She is beyond aid, and who cares anyway? A mincing candlestick in men's weeds, and probably bent as a bottle of crisps. What is she to thee?"
"A pledge of honor," answered Avery, as with a sharp call of, "All right, mine," he spitted a rashly approaching don. "Hang on, Malifwa, I'll be there. Don't you worry."
The words died on his lips, and he had a brief vision of primroses at the river's brim. Sheba, fed up with arguing, had gestured to Firebeard, and the giant, with the ponderous delicacy of a hippo swatting a fly, had clocked our captain on the nape of the neck. Avery's knees buckled. Firebeard grabbed him by the waistband, and with Sheba's sweeping sword covering their retreat, the two pirates sprang down the winding stone steps. Avery's unconscious form bumped and rattled on the rough-hewn walls as Firebeard swung him effortlessly along, and Sheba railed at the giant to mind what he was doing, for God's sake. The adored object wasn't made of wood. They raced on down the narrow spiral and emerged well clear of the pack on a narrow jetty beside a dark, foaming torrent, where canoes bobbed at their moorings, dim seen in the starshine, and Bilbo and Goliath were already afloat, fumbling with the painter and chanting, "Shove off, Jack! I'm inboard!" It was the work of a moment for Sheba to slash through the mooring of a second canoe and order Firebeard to dispose Avery's limp form carefully in its bottom. But when the big ruffian would have clambered aboard himself, she directed him sharply to Bilbo's canoe. The she-corsair's subtle mind was already thinking ahead, and whatever might lie before them in their escape down that mysterious river, she didn't want Firebeard along playing gooseberry. This was her chance to get Avery on a slow boat to wherever, and she meant to make the most of it. Furthermore, Firebeard was notorious for singing shanties in his sleep. Thus it was that when the Spaniards emerged with gesticulations and futile cries under the jetty, one canoe was already shooting into the murk, and the other was wallowing after it, with Firebeard sprawled across the thwarts and Bilbo yelling at him not to put his foot through the side, while Goliath crouched motionless in the bows, hoping that he might be mistaken for a figurehead. The Spaniards shook their fists and fired off arquebuses, but of course they didn't come within a mile of hitting the vanishing canoes. They never do. They mooched about the jetty for a while, though, acting thwarted, but secretly relieved to be rid of such frightful guests, until a young and offensively keen sergeant said, "Hadn't they better give chase?" At this there were yawns and groans of, "Not again, my Morian's killing me. Tequila break! No way, Jose, and get out the garlic and mandolins." "All very well," shrilled the sergeant, "but somebody was going to have to break the bad news to Don Lardo, and it wasn't going to be him." His words were drowned in a mad stampede for the boats, and the sergeant wondered despairingly if desertion wasn't the best way out. He needn't have worried. The sight of blood always had a soothing effect on Don Lardo, and after the recent disturbance, the dungeon looked like Dracula's dining room. But even this, like the escaping captives, was forgotten in the tyrant's delight at discovering that the gorgeous young moppet in silk knee-breeches and ruffles, who'd been left behind in the torture chamber, was his bride-to-be. True, she had fainted on being introduced, and had to be put insensible to bed, where nurses fussed about her with Ovaltine and thermometers and cologne compresses. But Don Lardo was undismayed. He gloated for a while over her pale loveliness, hardly able to believe his luck, and then lurched out, stroking his vampire bats and slavering. "Did you see the terror and hatred in those beautiful eyes there she swooned, Enchilada?" he croaked. "She loathes me, this little darling. Boy, what a honeymoon we're going to have!" His huge shoulders shook ecstatically, and his dentures shot out broadcast. "I just hope she doesn't go mad, at least not too quickly." "Sure, Excellency," cried the fat sycophant, "and she's rich, too. Meanwhile, do you wish to have these soldiers decimated, you know, those bums who let the prisoners get away?"
"You're just trying to make my night," gurgled the viceroy jovially. "Here, have a vampire. No enchilada, will just brand the officers and flog the rest once over lightly. As for those pirate scum, they won't get far the notorious River of Death, and if they do, I shall hunt them down in person, yes, and their whole vile brotherhood. That's it, enchilada, a mighty campaign to sweep these vermin from the seas." He cackled crazily and rubbed his hands. "Think of it. My fame will ring worldwide. The king will give me the Order of Santiago and take me hawking by the Guadalquivir in a mink-lined coat. People will write for my autograph, and that adorable dolly asleep upstairs. Oh, God, I don't know when I've felt so good. Proclaim my serendipity to the people tomorrow, and in the meantime, let's go and watch them cleaning up the dungeon." "You bet, boss," cried Enchilada eagerly. "Just for laughs." Good news and bad news, really. Our hero is off and running again, but he'll have a whale of a stiff neck. He's in Black Sheba's toils, and what of this River of Death, bearing them into the jungle fastness of the main? At least there'll be no lack of timber for Goliath's new wooden leg. Poor little Mellifluo, eh? Of course, romantic reason tells us she should be all right, but in a story of this kind, you never know. And that was a sinister crack Don Lardo made about wiping up the Coast Brotherhood. Aye, little do our bold filibusters know what's coming to them. And in especial, Happy Dan Pugh and his wild crew, bedazzled by the glitter, a newfound gold.